Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Today, we begin our series of debates for the general election on November 5th. We hear from the candidates running for state representative in the 3rd Barnstable District, which includes precincts 4, 5, and 6 in Bourne, precincts 3, 4, 7, 8, and 9 in Falmouth, and the town of Mashpee. Reminder of our format, we have our candidates have up to 2 minutes to answer questions on issues and up to 2 minutes for closing comments at the end of the program, and we will alternate who answers first. Candidates are David Vieira. He's the Republican incumbent. Good morning.
Morning, Mindy.
And Kathy Fox Alfano is the Democratic candidate. Hi, Kathy.
Hello, Mindy.
All right, we're going to start, Kathy, with you.
Sure.
And we're going to begin with one of the biggest issues facing our region, and that is affordable housing. What are your thoughts on affordable housing?
Well, Mindy, I've been a realtor for about 20 years, and I am on the Bourne Affordable Trust. And I am a big advocate for housing. I am so happy that the housing bill passed, and I believe that we should use every tool in the toolkit to find ways to build housing that is both accessible but does not disturb land that's already, you know, conservation land or open space or whatever we should be building and repurposing land. We have a really good opportunity at the base to build workforce housing, senior housing, and veteran housing. Those are my priorities. And I see that we can do ADUs now by right, which is also another way that people can add to the housing stock. One of the interesting ways is that seniors can build an ADU and then live in that in the smaller unit and rent out the home. So there's many different ways we should use them all to increase our stock.
Yeah, thank you. David Vieira, same question.
Yeah, so as Kathy mentioned, we did pass the Affordable Homes Act, and it came out at the last minute of the 23-hour session at the end of July 31st, into August 1st, almost lunchtime. But what we did there was create opportunities for communities that have not allowed ADUs by right. Now, as we know, in Falmouth in 2016, we passed an ADU bylaw here in the town of Falmouth, and we've seen over 55 ADUs on the books since passing our bylaw. However, our bylaw required a 7-month occupancy requirement in either the ADU unit or in the main unit, because a concern we have here on the Cape is whether or not folks are going to be building these extra units and then just Airbnb-ing. Right? So it becomes a hotel, a business in the residential neighborhood, not really addressing affordable housing. So I have some concerns about that because the state statute prohibits residency requirements. But I still voted for the bill because I didn't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. The other thing that we need to do is to recapitalize the MassWorks program. We're working on that. MassWorks is a grant program that I've helped our towns get the grants to be able to afford the infrastructure to protect our wastewater so that we can reduce the production costs of the housing. And the last one, our housing authorities have these units that aren't being put online, some cases up to a year, because they don't meet code and they don't have the money to do the work. And so we have millions of dollars available through the bond bill to be able to go and bring these units back online. When someone leaves an affordable unit that's funded by the state, they should be able to turn that around in 30 to 45 days.
All right, thank you. Dave Vieira, we start with you this time. There's been concerns over emerging chemicals of concern, such as PFAS. What do you support to protect public health?
Sure. So PFAS, and also in the end of session, we dealt with PFAS in the firefighters' turnout gear. We passed that law this session as well. So when we did our plant here in Falmouth, we upgraded a state-of-the-art water treatment plant. We had the capacity within that plant to create another form of treatment, and we didn't know what that would be. But we thought something might come down the line, and here we are, right? And so the ability to look at first, within our communities, treating the public water supplies at the wellhead or at the treatment plants if they have treatment plants. Some of the other ones don't have full treatment plants. They have small wellheads. The second part is to shut the spigot off. And that's where we need to continue to work and drive industry like we did with the firefighter protection bill, where we didn't just ban the fire gear now because they don't have safe fire gear without PFAS that will protect firefighters. But it puts a ban over a course of a number of years to drive the industry to come up with the new technology that does not include PFAS, because they know they're not going to be able to sell that gear in the market. And so whether it's dish soap or laundry detergent or even some of the clothes we wear, looking at driving industry to go and do the research and technology necessary to remove these chemicals in the first place. And in cases where it was a known exposure, hold those folks accountable.
Thank you, Kathy Fox. Alfano, same question.
I agree with everything that Dave said. We need to treat the existing things. There are technologies now to remove PFAS from ponds where it is sitting on the bottom of ponds, and we need to do that. And yes, PFAS is everywhere. It's even in toilet paper, which really grossed me out. But I agree. We need to go after the manufacturers and cut it as soon as possible. It is, like I said, it's everywhere, and we have no idea the destruction that it could be causing down the road. So we have to address that as soon as possible.
Thank you. Kathy Fox Alfano, we start with you this time. Where do you stand on the proposed machine gun range for Joint Base Cape Cod and why?
I have been an adamant opponent of the machine gun range because it sits on the sole source aquifer. Had it not, then that's a whole different story. But I understand the need to train, but there are at Fort Devon, there is already a range, and they can expand that without sitting on a sole source aquifer. Millions and millions of gallons of water for Falmouth, Bourne, and Mashpee come from the wells at the base, and we cannot afford to hope that the base will not pollute those wells. We've had history of people dying from things that have started at the base. So I am a firm believer that we need to stop the machine gun range. We're asking Governor Healey to stop it now.
Thank you. David Vieira, same question.
Sure. So out at Joint Base Cape Cod, we have a number of small arms ranges which are operating currently. A number of years ago, everything was transferred to copper ammunition. The copper ammunition was used, and all of the studies and the regulations through what we call EPSs, the Environmental Performance Standards, which are regulated by the Environmental Management Commission that oversees the base where the training is. That includes state-level commissioners that are overseeing that. They've implemented that. So what we see now is EPA is doing a sole source aquifer study, and the preliminary information came out with a determination that this may pollute the water. But when you actually read the study, it talks about everything that's going on the small arms ranges, same ammunition they're going to use on a machine gun range, and how they're collecting it and managing it, and it's going well. And they're using copper. I haven't seen EPA ask me to take copper pipes out of my house. And I assume that most, if not all, listeners have copper pipes in their house. And so what I want to see is, how is copper a threat to the groundwater? Because it's not in that report. And the report actually says, should this determination become final, no commitment of federal financial assistance may be allowed for this project unless the funding is for plans and designs for the project that will assure that it will not contaminate the aquifer. And so what I'm saying is, we need to assure that it will not contaminate the aquifer, and we need to use the standards that are currently being used and prospectively being used at the machine gun range that we're using on the small arms range. The contamination we have from the base was from ethylene dibromide and from lead. We don't use lead, and we don't spill jet fuel anymore out at the base.
Thank you. All right, David Vieira, we start with you. Your thoughts on building a climate-resilient infrastructure?
We need to do it, but we need to do it in a smart and affordable way. One thing that what we see right now is the driving costs of offshore wind. Now, I have supported the offshore wind cautiously, but I did vote against this last climate bill. It came the same week that we saw the blade lost out at the test site, which was starting to produce electricity, and it was starting to be brought online. There's 149 more of those blades that were produced at the plant in Canada, and we're not sure where they are. We're trying to track them down and figure out where they're at. And so for me, that was a yellow flag or a yellow light to slow down and figure out what are we doing and how do we do it in a responsible way. Conservation is another piece of it. We need folks to look at how they're using energy so that we can reduce the demand as we increase the supply of the clean energy. One of the first Seaport Economic Council grants that I got for this region was at the Tidal Turbine Test Center in the Cape Cod Canal. It's right off of the railroad bridge. The tides run consistently every day. If they don't, either the moon hit the earth or the earth hit the sun. And we need to start investing, I believe, in these clean energy resources. And we have the only test site in the United States is right here in the Cape Cod Canal. And we need to start putting more funding and focus on bringing up things that have a lesser impact to our environment and take us off the fossil fuel.
Thank you. Kathy?
Yes, I'm working with the Cape Cod Blue Economy Foundation to bring a climate tech center to the Upper Cape, where we would bring together existing blue and green companies with startups, because we have such a wonderful, unique location here. As Dave said, we have a tidal canal, we have bays, oceans, estuaries, we have it all here. So we can bring together blue and green companies to study just how we're going to address the climate problem, including coastal resilience, which is really the biggest problem that we're facing with our unique location. We also have such a wonderful marine knowledge base right here in Woods Hole and all of Falmouth and the Upper Cape. I want to bring these people together to create solutions and, at the same time, great new jobs.
Thank you. All right. Kathy, we're going to start with you this time. We had that unfortunate issue with a turbine blade at the Vineyard Wind Project that collapsed into the Atlantic Ocean. The debris washed ashore on area beaches, including fiberglass shards and foam board. Has this changed your position on wind power, and how do we prevent future problems like this?
Well, as Dave said, I think we need to track where the other blades are and make sure the manufacturer is doing their proper job. But no, it doesn't change my perspective, because just because a car has an accident, we don't stop driving. It is too important. It's too vital to our energy creation. And the area, I would say, south of here by the vineyard and whatever, is known as the Saudi Arabia of wind. We have some of the best wind on the planet, and we need to use it. But I want to make sure that the energy is first going to us, to the Cape, to Massachusetts, before we sell it off to other places. We should be benefiting from it directly.
Thank you. David Vieira, same question.
As I said before, it was a yellow light for me to make sure that we're doing things right and that we're finding out what went wrong and preventing it from happening in the future. But also, when we look at where we're placing them in the next round that would be required to meet the goals of the climate bill that didn't pass this session, we need to make sure that we are working hand in hand with our fisheries management folks and with frontline fishers. You know, we have the highest grossing fishing port in the United States in New Bedford, higher than any of the ports in Alaska, and that's because of the scallops. Actually, my last name, Vieira, means scallop in Portuguese. And so that scallop industry, we've already seen research just down the street that's come out in the last couple of years about the impact of the driving of the piles when they put the stanchions in to the cortisone levels and the stress levels of the scallop. And there's a concern of whether or not that will have a long-term impact on their ability to reproduce and for us to keep that fishery alive. That fishery is also been successful because of another organization that I've gotten some grants for up here called the Kunameset Farm Foundation. Ron Smolowitz, who is the head of that, he used to be a NOAA fisheries captain, and then he went back and created the terrestrial farm, and now he's got this foundation, and we've actually figured out how to increase the productivity of the ocean scallop by using rotation of crops like they do in the terrestrial farming, and to be able to redesign the technology of the dredges so that they don't go after our sea turtles, which was an issue. And if anybody hasn't seen it, go to Kunameset Farm Foundation and watch the scallop documentary. It's an eye-opener of what our scientists are doing in that small little farm in Hatchville.
We have the candidates running for 3rd Barnstable District, state representative for the 3rd Barnstable District in this morning. 866-999-4626 is our number. If you have a question for the candidates, we ask that it be issue-oriented and addressed to both candidates. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org, and we'll have more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We're hearing from the candidates running for state representative in the 3rd Barnstable District. They are David Vieira and Kathy Fox Alfano. 866-999-4626 is our number. If you have a question, that's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Dave, your turn to go first. This is a question from Roger in Falmouth. He says, medical aid in dying permits hospice-eligible, capable adults to receive a prescription from their physician to take if they decide that the suffering is intolerable and to die in their sleep. The issue has been well debated in the legislature, press, and has wide acceptance as an option at the end of life. What is your position on this issue and why?
I want to thank Dr. Kligler for the question, and he and I had an hour and a half coffee discussion of this issue at Coffee Obsession in Falmouth just a few weeks ago. And he knows that that I am opposed to physician-assisted suicide at this time. There are many reasons for that. Many people know the story of my mom's miraculous recovery after we pulled the plug. Doctors said she wasn't going to make it. She made it another 7 years. But, you know, we have a lot of ballot questions out there right now. This issue went to the ballot 3 times. It failed all 3 times. And so if there is that much appetite for it, clearly the Speaker of the House doesn't have an appetite because the bill did not come to the floor for a vote. Then potentially the referendum is the way to go. And I've outlined for Dr. Kligler and his supporters the way they can do that, or they have to convince the Speaker to bring it to the House. But I'm opposed to physician-assisted suicide.
Thank you. Kathy?
I, of course, am the opposite. I believe, and I would champion medical aid in dying. I believe that if you can do this for your dog, you should be able to do this for your mother. I personally have had also situations. My best friend passed away from cancer on Memorial Day, and she fortunately was able to control her pain with medications, but there are people who cannot, and it is horrendous to know that you're dying and to be going through pain that medications cannot touch. I don't think it's right that we should make people suffer like that when it's unnecessary. There are so many safeguards to make sure that you're not, you know, knocking off grandma for her inheritance. The situation that Dave is talking about is a completely different situation. Here you have to be 6 months, have a 6 month terminal illness. It's usually cancer or some other horrible disease where the person themselves is the one that requests this from 2 doctors. History has shown in the states that have allowed this that approximately 1/3 of the people do not even use it. It's just an assurance that if you get to a point where the pain is just unbearable, that you can take this and have a peaceful end. So that is why I support this.
All right, thank you. Kathy Fox, I'll finally start with you this time. Another listener question. What are your top priorities for supporting the arts in our district?
Well, I would include the libraries. I've been the chair of the library trustees in Bourne for several years, and before that I was also in Canton. The libraries are very important to me. I would want to see a way to reduce the cost of e-books because with the pandemic and after, the use of e-books has escalated enormously. The price of ebooks is ridiculous. What happens is the publishers charge, say, $25 for a book. No, I'm sorry, it's $75 for a book, and it has 24 uses. Whether or not you read the book, it's just once you click on it, they can charge. And therefore, the book is, after 24 uses, is gone, and the library has to rebuy that book. That's not true of a published book where you can, you know, keep it forever and share it with your friends or whatever. So I'd like to see the state be able to buy the books, ebooks, and control it that way. So volume discounts, you know, keep work with publishers to bring those costs down because there's enormous cost to the libraries. Other things, I've started 2 theaters in my life, so I would definitely support the arts, performing arts, visual arts. I've owned an art publishing company, so I am 100% with arts. I'm on the Bourne Cultural Council and the Bourne Community Engagement Committee. All of these are extremely important to me, and I would love to help.
Thank you. David?
So just recently, I had a lunch with Michael Bobbitt, who's the executive director of the Massachusetts Cultural Council. And we talked about the state investments, not only through the cultural councils, which the locals get passed through money, and then there's the grants available at the state level, but also through the Cultural Facilities Fund, which is a bonded fund that looks at the infrastructure to support the arts and culture. And one of the things that we saw, there were some traditional every year Mass Cultural Council funding going to large organizations that have large donor bases where they can raise millions and millions and millions of dollars. And meanwhile, you've got struggling artists or small theaters or production companies that are just trying to make ends meet or trying to enter the market. And so we're working over the course of the next year with the Mass Cultural Council to shift the grant requirements and the priorities for the state competitive grants to really make them targeted investments that will help lift up the arts and culture communities, help focus where the need is most, and not just, hey, thanks for doing a great job, here's some more money, even though you've got millions and millions of dollars endowed. Kathy brought up the e-books. I'm a co-sponsor of the bill that deals with the licensing issue. We have a licensing issue with the companies, the publishers, and we're trying to do some regulation on that, and the lawyers have been going back and forth, and Maryland did it already, New York did it, and we're trying to get it right before we do it here in Massachusetts. And then also, I would say that the Culture RX program, for those that have never been exposed to the healing power of art, music, theater, dance, to be able to have access to that. And so we are expanding that. I know here on Cape Cod, the Arts Foundation was one of the leaders in that. Mass Cultural Council is on board now, where folks can actually get a prescription from a doctor to go to an art venue as part of mental health and general health. And just a shout out to all the work that the Arts Foundation here on the Cape is doing. Julie Wake is actually a commissioner now of the MCC, so we have an official seat at the state board, and I was proud to be there to swear in.
Thank you. A reminder, we've got the candidates running for state representative in the 3rd Barnstable District. If you'd like to ask an issue-oriented question, we'd love to hear from you at 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. David Vieira, we start with you this time. We're seeing more interest in working from home following the pandemic, but our broadband infrastructure is spotty at best. What are your thoughts there?
So during the pandemic, we had to do the remote town meetings. And as town moderator for 26 years now in Falmouth, I could not run a remote town meeting from my house because my internet connection is so bad. And it would be really bad to have a town meeting of 243 elected members and the moderator not be online. And so I had to go downtown to town hall to run the remote meeting where folks were at home. Why town hall of all places? Well, because town hall is hardwired to Open Cape with fiber, as is most of Woods Hole and our anchor institutions. Now Main Street in Falmouth and certain areas in Buzzards Bay, certain areas down in Hyannis. And so the expansion of this is really the question of the last mile. How do we get there? Falmouth decided to go the route of doing a municipal light plant, not for electricity, but for broadband. We've elected our commissioners. They're looking at proposals. And how will it be a public-private partnership or will it be public-owned infrastructure? But we need to look at these models that work best in each community on the Cape and then to be able to go after some of the state, federal broadband monies that are coming through the Broadband Institute and implement the infrastructure last-mile connections here on the Cape. Falmouth decided to try to make it a public entity, a public utility, and that might not work for everyone. But clearly, what we did in Falmouth had Comcast coming in and upgrading the network in Falmouth because they were worried about the competition and they're trying to do something. They haven't run fiber everywhere yet, but I know it's a lot better at my house in the last year after the threat of having a competitor in the market.
Thank you. Kathy Fox-Alfano.
I was going to say, Dave said all the things already, but yes, competition I think is key. I went from Comcast to Verizon myself, saved us money, and we have basically the same internet. But I'm lucky I live in Bourne, so we don't have as many issues because we're closer to the mainland. But I do agree we need to go after as much funding as possible from the feds and the state to make sure that everybody has equal access to the internet, because in this day and age, that's it's so important. It's how we live these days. And you're right. Everything from town meeting to how you get all your communications. Everything is on the internet now, so it has to be a fair, equitable thing. And we need to bring the cost down. The costs are crazy. I mean, you know, and so I think competition there, again, will really help. So, yes, that is... Yeah, it's a crazy problem, isn't it, that we didn't have 20 years ago or whatever. So,
yep. Kathy, we start with you this time. Opioid epidemic is still with us despite some improvements in battling this issue. Do you have any ideas or proposals that may help?
Well, I know we have a lot of money sitting in the bank from the Saffler negotiations, and we might need to make sure that those are getting out to the people who are really working in this issue. I went to the Addiction Awareness Vigil, hearing the stories of people who've lost family members, and it's absolutely heartbreaking. And to find that it is still an issue after all this time, we definitely need to educate people, starting very young, unfortunately, you know, of the evils of these things. And I think the doctors now know not to prescribe things, but it's still getting out there. I mean, it's mind-boggling to think that, you know, fentanyl, it gets snuck into things that you don't even expect. You know, I talked to a family where their son accepted a joint from a friend, and it turned out to have fentanyl. The friend didn't know, and the boy died. I mean, these are things that we absolutely have to address, but we have to use the funding that we have now. And I'm sure Dave has all the detail on that. But yes, we have to make sure that we educate people. I'm working with the Born Substance Abuse Coalition. They are really going after this, teaching parents what to look for. And those are all really vital.
Thank you. David Beer.
So here in the United States, we have the worst opioid crisis of any industrialized country in the world. Last year in Massachusetts, out of a population of 6.9 million, we had 2,125 opioid-related deaths. In the Republic of Portugal, where 10 million people reside, there were under 100 opioid-related deaths. And so last year, I worked with the Luso American Development Foundation to bring João Galau, who is the doctor, medical doctor, who created the Portuguese experience and the proposals that have been implemented over the last decade or so in Portugal. And he came along with the PCP, the PSP, which is the National Police in Portugal, which would be equivalent of our police stations, and the Federal Judiciary Police, to meet with the leaders of the two new administrations. We had a new governor of Rhode Island, new governor of Massachusetts. And so we met at Bristol Community College. The Luso Centro hosted us and took care of those costs from the college. The foundation from Portugal paid for everyone to come over. And we had all of the leaders of the police, state police, district attorneys, sheriffs, local law enforcement representatives, and Department of Public Health folks, the new administrations from both states, to look at that experience, to not say, they walked in and said, oh, didn't Portugal legalize drugs? And we're like, no, they didn't. They decriminalized personal use. It's different. And when they left there, they understood the difference. Those relationships right now are continuing from both of our states with João Galau and his national directorate in Portugal. And they're learning, and they're actually some of the proposals that Governor Healey had in her opioid bill, which unfortunately the Democratic leadership couldn't come to an agreement by the end of session. Largest crisis we have in the Commonwealth, and here we are not being able to do it in a year and a half. But some of those proposals that Governor Healey has before the legislature came from these relationships. So I will continue those relationships, continue to work on that. But as Kathy said, we got to make sure that those settlement funds go to the right places.
We are hearing from the candidates running for state representative in the 3rd Barnstable District, David Vieira and Kathy Fox Alfano. If you have an issue question to ask them, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll have more after a break. You're listening to The Point. We are hearing from the candidates running for state representative in the 3rd Barnstable District, David Vieira and Kathy Fox Alfano. 866-999-4626 is our number. If you'd have a question you'd like to pose to the candidates, that's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. A listener in Falmouth wants to know how candidates will address lack of legislative transparency. They want to know more info on how legislators voted on issues. And Dave, your turn to go first.
I'll continue every year in a rules debate to make sure that all of our votes are online. The Senate finally, last session, put their committee votes online. The House leadership will not allow that proposal in the House rules. There is no reason why our votes in a committee in the legislature shouldn't be online. Our votes for the major roll calls are, the clerk's pledge has all the roll calls, but in the committees, which are the gatekeepers to what gets out of committee into the floor, are not. You have to call. Sometimes they'll tell you. Sometimes you have to go up there and get it. Everybody has a different rule in a different committee. There's no reason. So we're going to continue to fight to make all of those votes available online as they should be. That should be available to anyone who wants to look it up. We have public access here in Falmouth. Our station and many others are starting to take the feed because it used to be our live sessions, gavel to gavel, used to be on national public television. I used to come home from high school and turn it on and watch them. That's how I learned how to do this job, turn on Channel 44. But now we have the Legislative Information Service and that feed, and many of our government stations now are picking up the feed. So folks that are interested could come in. The main issue is scheduling. How do you know when it's on television? Because the Comcast provider will not allow them to be on the program guide. And we need public access to be able to be on the program guide so that folks can have access to those committee meetings and to those gavel-to-gavel sessions to see what we're doing in Boston.
Thank you. Kathy, same question.
Well, I have to say I find it's very difficult to find answers about voting at all up at the State House. I will tell you that I agree with David. All votes should be online. We represent the people. They should know what we're doing. I intend to put all my votes online so people can see what I'm doing. And I would encourage other legislators to do the same, and maybe that's how we get this going.
Thank you. All right, Kathy Foxalfano, we start with you this time. We're seeing mental health challenges on the rise, and access to treatment is a huge issue in our region. Any thoughts on how we make it more accessible?
I think we have to pay our people more to do this work. It is frightening how hard it is to find mental health access. I know that now there's a lot online, which is another way to access help, but it is it's not as good as in person. And I agree that funding for more accessible mental health is key. Education. There's a lot of groups out there that want to help, that, you know, have their nonprofits, whatever, but people are afraid to use them. You know, we have to educate people that mental health is a right. And it's just like if you have an illness of any other kind, you go to the doctor. Well, now we need to make sure that people believe the same thing about mental health.
Thank you. David?
Sure. So parity, mental health parity in the insurance industry is important. I voted for two of these bills as we try to move the mark. The original drive was done by our former Senate President, Therese Murray, who was my senator at the time and used to chair the Human Services Committee. But we need to make sure that we implement these laws and that we hold the insurance providers accountable. So that's making sure that folks have the ability to pay. Well, that's great. Now you have the ability to pay. Where do you go? And that's the market side, right? So the market side, I've consistently said this, and I'm trying to get folks to jump on the bandwagon. I can't yet, but we closed what we called the mental hospitals, right? The mental institutions in Massachusetts. And these buildings are still out there. Some of them rotted beyond repair. Others still infrastructure available. And I still believe that we should capitalize to bring these on as opioid, dual addiction, mental health treatment facilities and make sure that we have the clinicians, whether they're state clinicians or private providers as a mixed-use delivery system, and to create infrastructure. When I have to get a call in my office of a young man who's at Falmouth Hospital for over 30 days because they can't find a bed in a mental health facility, and I'm on the phones and my aide's on the phones and we're trying to help and figure out where to go, and finally we find a placement in the state of Connecticut, something is wrong. That bed in that hospital should be for acute physiological medical care. And we need to create the infrastructure to relieve the pressure on our traditional healthcare settings and to meet our commitment for the mental health crisis and the opioid crisis.
Thank you. David Veer, we start with you this time. Human trafficking is a larger problem in our region than some may realize. Not only sex trafficking, but forced labor. Your thoughts on addressing this issue?
Yeah, so we actually, that was another piece of legislation that that I supported dealing with that issue. And what we need to really do is work with our district attorneys and the Attorney General's office. The Attorney General has been very active, current and former. The former is now the governor. very active in identifying this issue that was sort of under the radar, right? Folks were like, oh, yeah, that happens all in the big cities and everything else. It's like, folks, it's happening right here in Falmouth, Bourne, and Mashpee. Our local police can tell you about it. Our district attorney can tell you about it. And so what we need to do is figure out where these connections are being made. Because these things are networks. They're, you know, there's a one-off here and a one-off there, like any crime. But there are networks, and we need to be able to break into those networks. And so over the last couple of years, the focus has been on identifying the networks and then being able to infiltrate the networks and shut them down. When we do that, we also have to make sure that the victims of these crimes have the services necessary. And one of those organizations on the Cape that has a Falmouth presence as well is Independence House. You know, Independence House, Lisetta, is doing a great job over there. And she really brought this issue into focus last year when we had the Kiana Barros walk in North Falmouth and really talked about an issue that people weren't even thinking about, right? Not only do we need to think about it, but we need to support our law enforcement folks to be able to get in there. And I think we need a see something, say something campaign, because we could have law enforcement tell us what to look for in our communities and our workplaces so that we can report to law enforcement that we think something's going on.
Kathy Fox-Alpano.
Yes, I agree. I was at a tribal meeting about missing Indigenous people, and the detective from Barnstable was there, and she said that there is human trafficking in every town on the Cape. And I was floored because, yeah, we think, you know, that can't, you said it's happening in big cities and whatever. No, it's happening here. It's happening in the sleazier motels and things like that. We need to work with the DA to educate people. Like you said, see something, say something is really important. Also, it's insidious. I mean, how they entrap people is just, it could happen to anybody, but it mostly seems to happen to younger people. And so we need to educate in the schools, you know, these people are out there. And I know it's frightening, but when you're educated, you're less likely to fall for it. So I think that is a very important thing. But so education is the priority. And awareness, that is the whole key. It's an awful problem, and it's something that you turn aside. You don't want to see it, but it's out there, and we have to address it.
Thank you. Kathy, we start with you this time. Another listener question. What is your stance on arts education in K-12 schools, and how would you advocate for its inclusion in the curriculum?
Yeah, it definitely should be included in the curriculum. I mean, when I went to school, arts, that's where I learned to love theater and learn visual arts and whatever. And to some people, that is the reason to go to school. You know, that is why they love school. So I would say, yes, it's very, very critical. I know Dave will have a lot to say about this because his wife is the principal of a school here in Falmouth. So, yes, I definitely would make sure that we have the funding. That the music program isn't, you know, shuttled off to the cafeteria, or the arts isn't on a cart. You know, I think the arts, we have to value that. Like I said, I started 2 theaters, so I know very well how that is a reason for some kids to just continue education. I mean, that is what drives them to want to go to school. So I think it's incredibly valuable.
All right. David?
So arts are essential. Part of education. They're in our curriculum frameworks. The issue is how do we make sure that they are implemented, right?
Right.
And so I partnered up with former leader Peak, who just left the legislature to work for the administration, and another group of legislators to move from STEM to STEAM, right? Science, technology, engineering, and math. That was our focus. That's what's important. Yeah, that's how to build a good widget. The question is who's going to have the creativity and the thought to think outside the box? What will the new widget be? that we need to create, right? So STEM to STEAM. So what we were able to do is get the Mass Cultural Council a seat on the STEM Advisory Board in Massachusetts. What we haven't been able to do is change the name. They wouldn't let us change the name, but like, okay, but at least we have a seat at the table, right? And so what we need to do is community by community, making sure that we see those arts STEAM as important so that we invest locally, that we actually make sure that we don't cut the programs first online, right? When we're talking about tight budgets, there's different ways to rein in tight budgets without taking one piece of an essential part of education and removing it. Kathy mentioned that some kids stay in school for art. I don't know if you know, my wife was an art teacher and a K-12 art education head here in Falmouth. And those were the kids that would come back after school and she would mentor, and they would come in because it was really the art that kept them in school so that they could get the reading and the math and the science and the rest of it. So it's so important. And I think what we're doing here now in the Cape, supporting art educators. There's an association on the Cape where they're sharing best practices and stories. Right here in Falmouth, we have a dynamic program that Jane Baker has. We help her get state grants all the time. So to go out to Penicuik Island and take kids into the environment where they can use math and science to explain and understand their art. And so it becomes this interdisciplinary opportunity that groups like the Falmouth Foundation and the Bourne Education Foundation fund similar projects in the town of Bourne.
Thank you. David Vieira, we start with you. We touched on water quality with the PFAS question, but I want to give you an opportunity to talk about water quality in general.
Sure. Well, this is one of my top three priorities as a legislator. You know, and as a legislator, it's important that I'm able to support this municipality's comprehensive wastewater management plans. Falmouth and Mashpee have certified plans and are moving well forward. Bourne is on the precipice of certification of their plan. And we do things like make sure that mass grant programs are available. You know, we were able to address the issue in Buzzards Bay by getting Mass Work grants and getting 100,000 gallons treated in the Buzzards Bay area, which helped with economic development. We're able to get the Mass Works grant in Mashpee so that we could do the affordable housing and mixed-use extension of the Market Street project. We also, in the legislature this past year, passed a tax relief package, which increased the septic tax credit for those that aren't on systems. Sewer systems, we went from $6,000 to $18,000. And so for those that are going to have to look at the ability to upgrade Title V and to go to alternative technologies, which are expensive, that tax credit has tripled through our tax relief package. And then one that I'm proud of, and Mashpee's already done it, maybe at some point Bourne might see a need for this, but Chapter 1 of the Acts of 2016. So in 2015, Falmouth put a home rule petition in to be able to take betterments for sewer and span out the cost over 30 years, allow no interest to be passed on to the homeowner, allow equal payments over 30 years rather than balloon payments at the beginning, and be able to put the charge on a quarterly tax bill. The next year, we did Chapter 1 of the Acts of 2016, and that was a bill that allows any municipality in the Commonwealth to accept it and do what Falmouth did to be able to lower the costs to all the homeowners that have to deal with betterments. Mashpee's already done it, and Bourne might need to do it in the future, depending on what comes out of your CMP.
Thank you. Kathy?
Yes, I've been very involved with the wastewater. I've been the chair of the Wastewater Advisory Committee in Bourne. We are, yes, working on the CWMP, and yes, it takes forever. However, we're close. We've had to change... paths a few times, but we're very close. And I agree that we definitely need more funding from both the federal and the state government for this, because I feel like the Cape Cod Commission and the DEP knew about these wastewater problems decades ago and really did nothing about it. So now we have a much bigger problem that cost us much more. So I think they own a big piece of this, and we need the help with the funding, because so many people have told me, if I have to put in a new system or I have to pay for a septic system, I can't live in my house anymore. So that's wrong, and we need to fix that immediately. I also think we need to use all the tools in the toolbox to eliminate the nitrogen problem. And I'm glad that MassTech just got a huge grant of $2 million to come up with more alternative systems that can be approved and used.
Thank you. All right, we're going to move to closing comments. It goes by fast, doesn't it? All right, so yeah. Kathy Fox-Alfano, your turn to go first.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Mindy, for having us. And thank you, David, for your 14 years of service here to the community. I believe there are some clear differences between our opinions. I believe, of course, the medical aid in dying is a big one. Also, I would have voted for the gun sense reform bill. I am all about women's rights. I've pledged to always vote for women's rights and clean energy. I want to start a climate tech center here in the Upper Cape to make our unique location, plus our wonderful marine knowledge base, bring people together to collaborate and to bring innovative solutions. Yes, our clean water is a problem. We haven't talked about the ponds. The ponds in Mashpee and Falmouth in particular are polluted. They are not part of the DEP regulations, and we need to make sure that they are addressed. They have some differences with the than the coastal waters, but I want to do a clean water caucus to bring together all the people who have this issue and shine a spotlight on it, find funding, and get it solved. I will also have open office hours in all three of our towns so I can listen to the needs of and concerns of our citizens. I would very much appreciate your vote in, I guess it's October to November. It used to be just November 5th, but now it's whenever you whenever and however you choose to vote. I really appreciate it, and I look forward to working with everyone to make Falmouth and Bourne and Mashpee an even better place to live. Thank you.
Thank you, David Vieira.
Mindy, thanks. Thanks for having me on again. And Kathy, thanks for having this debate. And we'll have another one with the League of Women Voters in Falmouth. And really, that you're going to, Mindy,
I'll be there.
Be moderating. And really about the issues. You know, and that's what it's really all about. And so I just want to begin by thanking the listeners and the constituents of the 3rd Barnstable District for giving me your trust over the last 14 years as your state representative. You know, I was born and raised in T-Ticket, and this has been the honor of my life to be state representative. And it's not always about what you've done, although we had an opportunity through our talks today to talk about some of the projects I've already worked on, but it's about what we see for the future. And so real quickly, I just want to say my priorities for the 2025-26 session are affordability, continuing to deal with our affordable housing crisis, our child care affordability. I was on both the commissions for early education and care to make sure that we are investing in the most important part of education, and that's pre-K, and state debt affordability. As the ranking member of the bonding committee, I am also a member of the state debt affordability committee to make sure that our debt load is manageable so that we don't pass on unreasonable tax burdens to our constituents. Second, the opioid crisis. We've taken some steps. We have a bill caught in committee, which is a travesty, and we need to continue to do that. Water quality, we already mentioned. And finally, filling potholes. 548 vote. 8683, that's my phone number over at our district office. Anybody needs help, call. You want a district meeting, I'll meet you at a coffee shop, the house, or at the district office. We go wherever is most comfortable for our constituents. But I'm Dave Vieira. I'm from T-Ticket, and it's an honor to be your state representative.
All right. Thank you, David Vieira and Kathy Fox-Alfano. Thank you both for being here. And if you missed any of their conversation this morning, you can find it at our website, capeandislands.org. Our next debate is Thursday with the candidates for state representative and the 5th Barnstable, Stephen Exeros and Owen Fletcher. I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.